So our shapeshifter this evening is the chief executive at Coca-Cola Beverages Africa, CCBA. His name is Jacques Vermeulen. And one of the biggest shareholders in the Coca-Cola company, and this could get a bit complicated, so you may need a pen and paper and your drawing skills because there is a complicated structure here. But one of the biggest shareholders in Coca-Cola is Warren Buffett. And when I went to his annual general meeting a couple of years ago, it was so funny watching Warren Buffett, who apparently drinks about 5 Cherry Cokes a day, sitting in this massive basketball stadium surrounded by 25,000 of his biggest fans who've made their way to Omaha, Nebraska, to watch him and Charlie Munger sort of jostle and fight and argue and answer questions. And Warren Buffett very deliberately opens a can of Coke. He doesn't put it into a glass. He opens a can of Coke. He ensures that the branding is facing the camera like you couldn't recognize it at 100 paces anyway. And throughout the meeting, takes sips of Coke. And the can, then I think about 3 or 4 breaks during the day, and the can is replaced in every break. And this is the richest man in the world, who, as far as I can tell, isn't dying of any sugar-related illness, who drinks tons of the stuff a day. So, therefore, Coca-Cola is good for you. No. do you drink Coca-Cola, Jacques Vermeulen?
I do.
How much do you drink a day?
Well, I drink various. We've got this whole portfolio. So, my favorite at the moment is Stoney Zero, which is an incredibly stony taste and a strong taste, and it's got no
You've
sugar.
Did you grow up in the SAB stable?
No, not.
You know, because you're speaking like an SAB disciple. whatever Meyer Khan's favorite beer at the time was, everybody who worked at SAB would stand with the bottle with the label facing outwards, drinking whatever he liked to be seen to be liking it. I suppose you've got to talk up the products.
Yeah. Look, I mean, we've got a wonderful range of products, from the brand Coca-Cola. And I think the listeners probably also associate us with just the red truck and Coca-Cola and just the brand Coca-Cola. But you have a whole range of beverages. You have Fanta, Sprite, the Spallettas, Appetizer is part of us. We do a lot of water.
Because you did buy Appetizer, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, it's part of this. It was part of SAB and with the merger that happened as Appetizer.
Let's just go back 10 steps quickly because, I mean, the days of Amalgamated Beverage Industries where SAB was the big shareholder, there was a family involved. It's all incredibly complicated. Who bottles Coca-Cola products in South Africa today?
So Coca-Cola Beverages Africa bottles Coca-Cola products in South Africa today. But maybe let me explain it for you because it is confusing for the people out there as well. The Coca-Cola company provides you with a franchise right to be able to produce, sell, and distribute the Coca-Cola beverages or the range of products that they have. The Coca-Cola owns the brands, doing the marketing, innovation, and the thought leadership specifically around the brands. Coca-Cola Beverages is a bottler that's been franchised by the Coca-Cola company, and effectively we produce, sell, and distribute the Coca-Cola beverages.
So you've got no intellectual property. I mean, you get the syrups, the various syrups. You make sure the water is nice and clean and pure. You mix the two together. You pop them into bottles. I don't mean to oversimplify. You pop it onto trucks, and you make sure that there's plenty of the fizzy drink in shops.
And we take them to our customers and get them close to consumers, So the Coca-Cola company is the marketing arm, and the bottler, which is us, is effectively the execution arm of the business.
All right. Where does the syrup come from? Does it all get made? Where did what was his name? Pilkington? No, Pemberton.
Pemberton.
Pemberton made the original syrup using coca leaves and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Does it all come from the cellar of the Pemberton house still somewhere in the middle of America?
Well, that was the secret about it, and that's the iconic story around the brand Coca-Cola. Our supply is out of Swaziland, so the whole of Southern Africa and Pan Africa effectively gets supplied out of Swaziland.
Why?
So the Coke factory has been set up there.
Why?
It was years ago with the old sanctions, it was set up there, and it's still a historical thing. And obviously with the investment that's being there, it's difficult and expensive to move. So in essence, it stayed there for the last years, as far as I can remember.
So there's a guy somewhere in Swaziland who's got a little cigarette box with the Coca-Cola recipe written on it so that he can make the syrup.
I wouldn't say it's a cigarette box, but there's a recipe that he uses and they produce it. Yeah, it's a very dedicated line, a very closed off line, and they produce Coca-Cola.
Do you know the ingredients of Coca-Cola? The detail, the proportions?
I have no idea what it is and how they get you that final solution. I know it's different combinations that you put together when you mix the brand Coca-Cola and you produce it in our factories, but what it is, I don't know.
So what do you get sent, like a 25 liter bucket of syrup? And you dilute that?
We get a 25 liter syrup, tank, or plastic cylinder, or three of them, and then you mix that at certain points, and you've got mixing instructions. So we do have mixing instructions. So it's a complete recipe that you follow and mix, and then you bottle it through that process.
Why does the Coke out of the machines at the movies taste disgusting relative to the Coke that comes out of a bottle or a can?
Because those machines are not controlled, because it's a machine that's connected to water, and they've got a syrup tank, and that fills it there. And if somebody changes the mixing, then you have a diluted version of it, and then there's obviously a...
Because it's always appalling.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate situation. So the better one to buy is a can or a closed bottle.
We'll talk about that in just a bit, because I'm... Okay, so the ownership now, Coca-Cola Beverages Africa. There is AB InBev bought SAB Miller. SAB Miller was the controlling shareholder in Amalgamated Bottling Industries or Beverage Industries.
That's right.
And then, no sooner had AB InBev bought SAB that the Coca-Cola company went, hold on a second, we've got a right to ownership of the bottling plant in South Africa, and they bought out AB InBev.
Yeah. So what actually happened was the ownership of three bottlers, effectively. There were Shinduka Beverages, the Coca-Cola, SAPCO, and then ABI, which was controlled by SAB, decided to put all their bottling interests, soft drinks, together into one organization called CCBA. That happened in July 2016. October 2016, AB and InBev took over SAB, and there was a clause in that Coca-Cola had the right to exercise their option in the event of a change of ownership or control. So on October, AB and InBev became the controlling shareholder with the Gucci family investment. And then in February 2017, Coca-Cola effectively completed that process and controlled CCBA.
Who's the Gucci family? Because CCBA, Coca-Cola Company owns 65.5% of CCBA, Coca-Cola Correct, Beverages yeah. Africa. And the Gucci family from Port Elizabeth owns 34.5%.
That's correct.
Who are those people?
It's a family that's been operating over the last 75 years in Port Elizabeth, well-known Eastern Cape family, and they owned a business called Coca-Cola SAPCO, Pty Limited.
That was them.
And that was them, yeah. And they had operations in certain portions of South Africa and then in East Africa predominantly as well. So all of that was combined with SAB's ABI, in essence, which was the South African-based, and that was the creation of CCBA in 2016.
Because these guys must be like the Ruperts and the Oppenheimers. You just don't hear about them.
Very low profile and very involved in the communities in the Eastern Cape, yeah.
What an interesting turn of events. You learn something new every day. This is the seventh largest Coca-Cola bottling business in the world.
Yeah.
What is your market? Is your market the whole of the African continent? Do you stop at the Sahara? How far do you go?
Yeah, we've predominantly focused on sub-Saharan Africa, but we generally in 12 countries, so Namibia, South Africa, Mozambique, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Ethiopia. We've got Ghana on the west side of Africa, and then Comores and Mayotte is the two islands we have as well. So quite unique and quite different.
We're talking the Coca-Cola business in South Africa with the chief executive of Coca-Cola Beverages South Africa, Jacques Vermeulen. Questions for Jacques? I've got a couple. A little angry person whispered in my ear this morning. I've got a very angry, quite a pursed-lipped voice note from somebody I know this morning. Say, when you speak to the Coca-Cola man, ask him this question. That question's coming up next. Jacques Vermeulen, chief executive of Coca-Cola Beverages Africa. Why have you changed all the serving sizes?
To give consumers a bigger choice of variety.
No, so you've given them less.
And more.
Less and more. Okay, explain yourself.
I think consumers clearly indicated to us that they need a different size or a different options or more choices effectively.
So your 500 mil went to 300 mils.
No, 500 mil went to 440.
You see 440, yeah.
And
well, so 340 mil can of 10 years ago went to 330, now sitting at 300, and you've changed the shape and made them tall and thin.
To a long slimline can, yeah. So in essence, what we've done is to ensure we can keep the price the same, we reduced the...
It's shrinkflation.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Because otherwise we would have taken the price up. So as you know, the sugar tax came in April last year, which was quite an unfortunate situation.
What is the impact of sugar tax on a 300 mil can of Coke?
Quite a significant impact, and therefore that's the reason why we reduced it slightly. The sugar impact is about R3.57 on a can. So that 60 mils drop is a significant reduction, small reduction to be able to compensate and to keep that price point intact for the consumer.
If that's the case, and this was my purse-lipped correspondence question this morning, why then did you reduce the size of the Coke Zero and the Tab cans too? There's no sugar in those.
The cans is more around the standardization. But if you look at the bottle, for instance, you'll find that the bottle is 500 ml versus the 440 ml on the sugary drink. So in essence, the sugary drink was reduced and the zero drink was increased in size.
But the cans are the same size.
Yeah, the cans are the same size.
So, isn't that a bit of sneaky accounting price gouging?
It was more around standardization and ability to be able to supply or get cans in South Africa. Because there's quite a lot of supply constraints and complexities in that piece of the supply chain.
How do you go by, you actually fundamentally change, I mean, you're old enough to remember these things, but you know, bar-sized Coke cans used to be short and squat.
Yeah.
And then there were 200ml Coke cans, they were fat and short, they were like half a 340ml size can,
yeah.
And then they became tall and thin. And then that became the new standard. And now you've created another new standard. That changing of tooling and all of that sort of stuff is a huge job.
Yeah, it's an incredibly expensive job, and it's an incredibly involved role as well, because you've got to really time the equipment well, and you've got to and tune the equipment to be able to deliver that, yes.
How does one differentiate between fake and real Coke, and how much does it cost them? Is there fake Coca-Cola in the market?
Not that I'm aware of. There's okay. Only the real Coke.
Let's go to Western Area. Apparently they have fake Coca-Cola there.
I'll have to check it out.
I mean, because it would be a good brand to rip off, frankly. Yeah. I mean, if you could produce the stuff cheaper and just not, you know, put all the ingredients in and sell it in a Coke-like can, people will fall for that sometimes.
I'm sure people will fall for it, yeah. So, but we'll have to follow up, so I can't comment on that.
No, but how big a threat then are the Jives of the world, the Shells of the world? And there's another big bottling mob in the Free State as well. What are they called? Sort of the H...
There's a Twizzer.
Yeah, Twizzer. I mean, you've got
quite a lot of
price point competition.
Yes, yeah. Look, we welcome competition. And I think competition also keeps us on our toes and keeps us focused in our business. And we always welcome competition. And it makes sure that we're going to be smarter in how we do business and go about our business. And competition creates more opportunities for consumers. And it gives opportunities to us as well, because it really helps us to start focusing on what we're good at and what we should be doing. So I'm really, really encouraging and open to have competition in the country.
And companies like Woolies, I mean, their volumes aren't huge relative to what you do in the mass market. But, I mean, they produce their own label stuff. And, I mean, they are, you know, undercutting what you could be doing.
Yes, yeah. Woolies obviously is a niche market and is a very niche product and provide a very niche product to their consumer base. And we also supply in that retail sector specifically. But in essence, I think at the end, it's all up to us to provide a choice to the consumer and provide a beverage of their choice so that they have that choice to make.
Why? Big in South Africa. We saw in the Pakistani cricketers' shirts. Pepsi is very big in Pakistan, clearly. And it's big in some parts of the world, but not big here. Pepsi's tried coming through via lots of different channels into the South African market, but it's never really unseated the dominance of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I think maybe they're not strong in South Africa, but outside of South African markets, they're very strong.
In other African markets.
In African markets, yeah. Very robust. You take Nigeria, for instance. And I think in South Africa, they never really invested and grounded themselves to the extent that we've done or that they've done in other African countries or in Pakistan and India. But they are a threat and they are a competition to us and they are a strong force to reckon with.
Have the competition authorities ever come sort of prodding around and tried to establish why it is that you are as dominant as you are across multiple product lines and multiple channels?
Look, we're always under the scrutiny for the competition authorities, and we're making sure that we comply with the legislation across Africa and across our footprint, because we make much to government. You know, we're an organization that's far more than just the soft drinks that you see, because the role we play in the local communities, the role we play downstream in the value chains, is a significant input that we provide into the local economies. And we're actually quite proud about what we do in the local communities and creating those roles and jobs and giving people something to hold on to, and training and development is a fundamental piece of who we are. In Ethiopia, if I can tell you a little story, we bought a factory in Bardar and sort of in the northeast side of of Bardar, Ethiopia. And Ethiopia's an incredibly proud nation. And this whole factory was built and manned by Ethiopians. There's no expat. And we took all local people where we developed. We took them to Germany while we're developing the lines. And when the lines were commissioned, we actually appointed all of these people. So that whole factory, plant, and market is run by Ethiopians under the age of 30. And that's something to be really, really proud of. And we're incredibly chuffed about that. In fact, we're busy installing the second line in that area. And these guys are running it. In fact, if you look at the results of this factory, it's one of the best plants in the Coca-Cola Beverages Africa group.
Amazing. You put young people in charge. I mean, you empower them, and they do the job. Kingsley, that's the drink that I was thinking of. Those are the guys in the Free State. I mean, somebody else is saying, fake Coke is called Kingsley. It tastes just like Coke.
That's what you meant.
that's what people are telling me now on the SMS line. It's just like, I suppose, I mean, one of the critics from within SAB at the time, looking at the craft beer industry and saying, boy, all the craft brewers are just trying to produce Castle. Why can't they do something different? Everybody's, I think, for millennia, have tried to reproduce Coca-Cola.
Because that's the one that's got the unique taste, and it's the iconic brand that's in soft drinks.
How much Coke do we drink as South Africans?
Clearly not enough.
No, obviously. Is your dad a dentist? Yeah.
Look, 40% of our mix is Coke, brand Coke.
Okay.
But we're starting to see a shift in consumer behavior and consumer patterns. So moving away from the sugary one to the zero. So we see quite a strong uptake in the zero Coke, or the Coke without sugar, and same with Fanta and Sprite, which we're quite encouraged with because we really want to give a choice and give people
Do people still drink Tab? Because, I mean, Tab used to be the Coke Zero of its day.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Coca-Cola brand is so strong that I would think that probably Coke Zero outperforms Tab.
Yeah, no, it does. There's incredibly strong following in Tab. And even if you look at the mix of Tab to the total, it stays constant year after year. It doesn't go up. It doesn't change. So there's this following in Tab, which is quite amazing.
So what volume of fizzy drink do you produce a year in total?
We talk a different language, and people's not going to understand.
Hectoliters. What do you do?
No, we don't. We talk unit cases. But it's not all Coke. So it's 540 million unit cases that we do.
540 million unit cases. And is that, 20 liters per unit case? No, that's 2 billion liters.
It's just over 5 liters a unit case.
Okay.
But that's
so it's
water.
It's 2.5 billion liters of fizzy drinks a year.
No. That's water, that's juice, that's value-added dairy, that's all other beverages we're providing. So it's a whole range of products.
You've got the number. You're an accountant. You know it. How much fizzy drink do we drink in South Africa a year out of Coca-Cola Beverages Africa?
Roughly about 400 million, so it's about 2 billion.
2 billion liters a year. That's an awful lot of fizz and sugar.
We're 55 million people.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll do the sums later. I mean, per head, I can't do 2 billion. That's about 400 liters per person per year. That's an awful lot of Coke. Was it 40 or 400?
No, it's less than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a lot.
Not enough. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to still grow.
it's a really interesting story. And then, of course, Appetizer fits into the mix now as well.
Yeah, Appetizer was a brand owned by the SAB. And with the merger, the Coca-Cola company bought.
Are you going to globalize it?
We're in the process of globalizing it.
Because it's got to be one of the greatest South African products.
It is. It's an incredible brand, and it's an incredible following in South Africa.
Because SAB did try to take it global during the 80s and stuff, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and it was called the champagne of fruit or juice.
Are you still allowed to call that, or the French object?
Probably.
The Cup Classique of fruit juice, it doesn't work the same.
But the whole idea is to take it global and also, you know, to tell the story that it's a South African brand originated out of South Africa.
By an Italian.
By Italian, and something special and unique.
Yeah.
And the same with Grape Tizer, which is linked to Apple Tizer.
And Pear Tizer, and all the Tizers. The global brand of Apple Tizer was Tizer. Never really had the same sort of ring to it. Jacques van Meerlin, Chief Executive at Coca-Cola Beverages Africa, CCBA. Thank you for coming in and telling us the tale.
Thank you for having me.
2 billion liters of fizzy drinks a year. That's a lot of Olympic swimming pools.